What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson.
I studied exercise physiology and competed in many various sports ranging from wrestling to ultra running. I use that knowledge to combine today's science with ancient wisdom to live an optimal lifestyle and to spread that information onto the masses.
I'm a lifelong weightlifter and I'm obsessed with health and wellness. My degree in biology, with an emphasis in neurobiology, physiology, and behavior, allows me to take a deep dive into the most current literature and bring that information to you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to show your support, please rate and review on your favorite podcast provider, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or SoundCloud. Also, sign up on our website, tntwellnessandnutrition.com, for all of our up-to-date content.
Let's get this started. Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. This is episode 40, and this episode is part two of our five-part series of the five worst foods to eat, and we're going to be covering soda today, which is basically just sugar, because that's what soda is. But first, let's do a little check-in. So Tom, how's your week been?
So last week on the podcast, I kind of stumbled across cellular metabolism. Now I'm stumbling across pronouncing it. just being a little confused on how what everything was going on. So I just did a little refresher real quick. And just as
what do you mean? Did you? With glycolysis.
Glycolysis. Got it. Glycolysis is there to produce energy. But no, that's not what glycolysis is. Yeah, you do produce a little bit of ATP there.
A couple.
But what it's really doing is creating electrons for the electron transport chain and acetyl-CoA for the Krebs cycle. And then that's where all the ATP is produced, really, is the electron transport chain. So I just had to do a little bit of, you know, just re-education on that. It's been a while since I've gone over that. Most of the time when I'm looking through stuff, I just think of the forest as a whole instead of one individual tree at a time, just saying how does this affect everything. So it's good to kind of like dial it in again. It's been a while since I've gone over that.
Yeah, no, for sure. You had me doubting myself for a second. I was like, what am I talking about?
Well, because I just thought, like, glycolysis, you're producing energy. Like, that's what it's for. And it's like, oh, no, that's not what it's for.
Mm-hmm.
It's to produce, byproducts for the other things that actually do produce the energy.
Yeah, it's actually very inefficient at producing energy.
I think it's, I forgot what it was, but it's less than 10 ATP produced.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's 2. After you factor in what ATP you have to donate to glycolysis to produce pyruvate.
Yeah, it's like it takes 2, you get 4 out of it, and then, but that's not the magic of it.
Exactly, yeah.
So I just had to kind of go over that. And then I got some good news. So the American Diabetes Association, the ADA, they now list under their standards of care a low-carb diet, which is pretty big news because, all right, the low-carb diet is anything under 130 grams of carbs, which is still a high-carb diet, as most, like, low-carbers are concerned. But they're finally recognizing that the body doesn't need, or the brain especially, doesn't need 130 grams of carbs to come from your diet to function fully. That's where that 130 grams of carbs comes into play.
Yeah, it's like an old, like, folktale. Like, if you go to, like, a dietitian, they'll say you have to get this many carbs a day because your brain will use that many carbs.
So they're finally recognizing that our body can produce its own sugar, or its own glucose, gluconeogenesis. We've done an entire podcast on it.
Yep.
So if they're able to recognize that, then it's just a matter of time before they're going to say, oh yeah, you can do an even lower carb diet, and maybe even a ketogenic diet, and maybe even a zero carb diet. So this is just the first step toward that. I mean, this is really big progress.
That is, that's big news.
Yeah.
That really is.
And the study that they use to support their data is a one-year study by Virta Health. And so, and you can go on this website, it's called lchf/rd.com, and they have the printout that cites this study that you can bring to your doctor to be like, hey, I don't want to be on insulin anymore, I want to try this low-carb diet, and your primary care physician should agree with this, because the American Diabetes Association states it.
Acknowledges it.
Yeah.
Yeah, Virta Health is, I'm pretty sure they're based out of San Francisco, or at least the Bay Area, close to us, and they've actually shown low-carb diets reversing diabetes.
Yeah, and it's great that there's a lot of studies that are showing that, but they're not recognized by the authority figures, and it's just such great news that one authority figure is recognizing true science coming out.
Yes, finally. It only took, what, 70 years?
Hey, I'm excited, man, because the last study that I, or the last thing that really came out was that whole glyphosate's okay. for the EPA.
Yeah, I guess we'll take wins where we can take them.
So I'm just glad that this is happening. And I mean, the American Diabetes Association, I don't know if there is a bigger authority on diabetes than that. So I don't really know if this can get counteracted.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. I'm not sure how that works.
I mean, once it's out, I'm pretty sure it's good.
You know, it wasn't that long ago. I think it was like the 80s, maybe even up to the early 90s. I was looking into it, obviously, for research for this podcast, that the ADA recommended diabetics, like, there was no limit on fructose intake because fructose is low on the glycemic index. So they're pretty much told, like, diabetics, go eat all the fructose you want. And we'll explain in a minute why that was a real problem.
I mean, it does make...
That was only 30 years ago.
It does make sense, because, like, that's what you're looking at, is glycemic index, glycemic load. Mm-hmm. So, like, what happens, like, right after you eat something? And, yeah, the fructose isn't going to affect your blood sugar right away. No, it takes a little bit of time.
Exactly, yeah. And the way it affects it is so much more... God, I don't know what the word is, like...
Complex, intricate.
Yeah, exactly. It's not, like, a simple, just, like, blood sugar spike. Like, there's way more stuff going on.
Yeah, and it's a little bit longer lasting too, but we'll get into that in a little bit. Yeah. So what's new with you?
Not much. Everything's going good. I'm really back in the groove with my diet. And yeah, I've actually had some real lean days as of late. So had some 70-30 days. So 70% protein, 30% fat. And that's about as low as you can go while still eating like whole foods. Because I don't mess with chicken. I only eat pretty much ruminants now. So I'm eating a lot of venison and a lot of just white fish. And it doesn't get much lower than 70-30.
That seems crazy low to me.
It's very low, you know. And but it's working, you know, definitely getting leaner. And I don't feel too bad yet. You know, I still feel okay. But people are starting to notice. And it's when, like, you start getting thin, like, in your neck and your face, people start to say, like, oh, are you losing weight? You know what I mean? Like, it happens, you know? But that's okay. It's just funny. I had an interesting conversation the other day. I had a big bowl of just venison. It was about a pound. And I was eating it, and it just hit me that if this is all I ate every day, I would die.
Yeah. I mean, we did an entire podcast on protein poisoning. Yeah.
Right? That's a weird thing. And there was a girl next to me, and I was like, you know, if I ate this every day, I would die. Like, this is all I ate. And it wouldn't be from a nutrition standpoint. I had some liver in there, too. I try and make it as nutrient-dense as possible. But from a pure caloric standpoint, I would die. She was like, no, you just, like, intuitively, that doesn't make sense. You have food, you wouldn't starve.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, you would starve. And I kind of went into it, like, if you just went out and ate rabbits all day, you could eat 100 pounds of rabbit a day, and you would starve. And it's weird. It's a weird little thing. You know what I mean?
Well, if you added, like, fatty sources, I mean, you could live off of venison, but you'd have to get bone broth, get that extra bone marrow, get some extra fat that way.
Yeah.
Go for the brains. Like, that's usually, like, one of the fattier parts. Like, you just have to, you could live off of just venison. You just have to tweak it a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you couldn't live just off ground venison with what I'm eating, you know? And, I just thought it was funny, but that's what it's taking right now, is really getting my protein through the roof and my fat just down to nothing. But that's okay. I still have some refeed days here and there. And actually, I just had a conversation. Actually, you were part of it too. If you noticed, one of our clients texted us and she was like, what's a refeed day? And it's just funny that what I'm doing right now, I consider dieting, right? Would you consider dieting?
I think if you're trying to change your body composition, like, you're dieting.
Yeah, it's dieting. Okay.
Whether you're trying to gain muscle, like, that's, you're dieting, or you're trying to lose, like, body fat. Like, I think anything that when you're trying to just change your composition.
Well, I would say that dieting isn't sustainable.
No.
Okay, so dieting comes, at least my definition, it's not your definition too, comes with, like, a pace. Like, it is taxing, and there are hard days, and it is a test of will. And you can't maintain it. And this client that we have, they all think they're dieting. And I'm like, no, you're not dieting. You're just eating healthy. And you're so unhealthy that eating healthy causes you to lose weight. And that the people think, oh, I'm losing weight, that I'm dieting. And I have to explain to them, you're not dieting. You agree?
Yeah, I just think, like, you're just eating healthy. Exactly. Like, I don't equate those two.
Yeah, because I want to say you're not dieting. You're just eating healthy.
Yeah.
Exactly, right? And that's sustainable, because you can eat healthy. Like, if I was just eating my normal ground beef and steak or whatever, I can do that 24/7, 365, no problem. That's not dieting. And but just a little funny, I guess, thing that happened. But yeah, that's about it. Training's going good. Well, I kind of twisted my left hip flexor. I think that's what it is. I train abs at the very end of my training sessions, and some of my training sessions are just long, they're hard, and I am like, I'm calorie reduced most of the days. I'm more fatigued most of the days nowadays for sure. So normally I do hanging like crunches, like reverse crunches for like, lower abs,
Leg raises.
leg raises, yeah. So I do hanging leg raises for my lower abs. That's the only part of my abs that I train. My upper abs are gonna come in no matter what. And I was just so fatigued. Normally I do both knees at once and you kind of kick your knees up as high as you can. And I was like, man, I was just spent. So I started doing one leg at a time. Like
They're a lot
one.
harder that way.
Well, I was just trying to look for a way out. Like I was just so tired. And my left leg, I kicked it up and like I kind of felt it pinch a little bit. This was a few days ago. So my inner thigh has been kind of sore. So I skipped leg day today just to let it rest. And was it my brain like looking for a way out, like not to work out today? Maybe. But I treated it like a recovery day. I did my little yoga routine and I did 45 minutes of steady state cardio. But besides that, I'm feeling fine.
Good, good.
Yeah.
And just going back to what you're saying about venison, there's very few foods that you could just eat that food and be okay. Like if you were to just eat blueberries, yeah, you would die. Like if you just ate potatoes, yeah, you would die. Like there's
Yeah.
very, very few foods that like you could just survive off of that alone.
You know what? That's funny. I didn't think of it that way because I think of it in the way how I would normally eat. Like if I had just ground beef in front of me every day or like ground liver every day, I would not die. So that's the way I think because my food is so nutrient dense. But yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah, if
I think like eggs would
yeah.
probably be the
Eggs would
best.
work too.
Eggs would probably be the best bet. I mean, because then you
Yeah.
could even eat the shell and just add some like,
Calcium.
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I mean, I think like eggs would probably be the best food if you could only
No,
choose
maybe
one.
sardines.
Yeah, okay, because now you're eating and
The whole thing,
you have
every
to go
day.
nose to tail with
Every
sardine.
day.
Yeah.
Yeah, sardines would probably do it. But eggs, I think, would be a close second. Yeah, it would. So yeah, that's what's going on with me, doing good, doing just research for this podcast. We've never actually, I don't know, I don't think we really talked about soda.
We've talked about sugar and how it affects damn near every single chronic disease that's out there, and how
Yeah.
that's pretty much the number one cause of almost everything. I mean, we talked about how bad vegetable oils and how those high omega-6 inflammatory foods, how bad those can be. And now this is the other one that's going to be right up there.
Yeah, talk about like a horrible 1-2 combo. This is it. And I think a lot of people mistakenly would classify me and maybe even you as anti-carbohydrate because I do consider myself a zero carb person, athlete, whatever you want to say. And I'm not particularly anti-carbohydrates. I think carbohydrates have a purpose. They have a purpose as fuel, as fast, ready fuel, jet fuel, something Tom says a lot. And I 100% agree with that. I just think the people that truly need this fuel is a very small pool.
Oh yeah, like there's a very, very small amount of people that need it, and they only need it a short, limited amount of time. So the two times that you actually do want carbohydrates is, hey, I ran an ultra marathon. Sugar was my friend that day. When I got to like mile 18, I started to get a little like fatigued. I was like, you know what? Those Oreos will probably be a good source of some quick energy. Those M&Ms in that trail mix will probably be a good source of that quick energy. And you know what? I burned that calories off, that sugar off
Yeah.
in an hour. So it's not like I was, consuming it on a daily basis. And the other time that you want to have it is if you want to get fat. And that's
Yeah. That's there you go.
and honestly, like most people are not trying to eat to get fat. Most people have the opposite problem. So yeah, I mean there is some benefit to it. Just most people aren't using it correctly.
Yeah, the use cases are so limited. They really are. But they are there, so don't I wouldn't paint me in the box at anti-carbohydrate because I'm really not, but
We're just talking about sugary beverages in general, talking about soda, energy drinks, sports drinks like Powerade, Gatorade, fake juice, something like Sunny D or like High C. We could include real juice in this too, but there's a little bit more benefits to real juice. I mean,
barely.
I mean, these foods are Fs, like fruit juice is like a D minus. So it's not quite the worst fruit out there, but it's still not beneficial either.
Yeah, because as far as what humans need from a nutritional standpoint, we have essential amino acids, essential fatty acids, and then vitamins and minerals. So, from let's say a can of Coke, you're not getting, what are you getting in a can of Coke?
zero of any of that.
Zero of all that stuff, right? All you're getting is pure sugar that you better be running up a hill or it's all getting stored. At least in a thing of orange juice, you're going to get a little bit of vitamin C and I guess that's it. Not much else, you know what I mean? Some other vitamins, maybe.
But hey, it's a positive.
Exactly,
it is. There's like one check mark there. So exactly. That's why we didn't include this, but yeah. You pretty much could as well.
Yeah.
So these beverages are extremely addictive. Some of them are addictive because of the caffeine effect. Mostly they're addictive of the sugar, or in the case of like soda and energy drinks, it's a combination of the two. So they're extremely addictive.
Yeah.
And most are fruit flavored. So we start to crave them. And I'll talk about this more when we get to the Doritos podcast. But yeah, like they're fruit flavored for a reason. You don't drink just sugar water. They have to have some sort of flavoring. That's why there's so many fake juices out there that taste like oranges or taste like some sort of fruit punch medley. Or sodas are the same way. They taste like either some sort of root, like root beer, ginger, lemon lime. Like they're all fruit flavors or some sort of flavoring. So they're not just sugar water. There's a little bit more evil science behind it.
Yeah, this world of highly processed foods is a war of chemical warfare that you're not even aware you're participating in. These people are tricking you, or at least tricking your brain in more ways than one.
Yeah, so the way we consume these is, so even a small soft drink at a McDonald's or any other fast food restaurant chain is going to be 20 ounces. That's roughly 70 grams of sugar. So in a healthy individual, there's about 4 grams of sugar in our blood. So 70 is 18 times more than 4. So just if you're getting a small drink and just having one, you're getting 18 times more sugar than you could ever need.
And that's so crazy.
And that's a small. Like, who's getting a small? Like, when you could supersize it for an extra 50 cents. And that's not even including all the sugar that your body's getting from the bread or from the French fries, too, because all that's turning into sugar, too.
Yeah,
so you're getting a lot more than just 18 times what you need.
Exactly.
And then a double gulp from 7-Eleven, that's their, like, biggest drink. That's 50 ounces. That's about 175 grams of sugar. That's 44 times more than we need. And you're consuming that in, what, 10 minutes at the most?
And just think where you're consuming that. Most people are going to pick this stuff up and on their way to work. And what do at work? They sit in a cubicle. So you're literally drinking jet fuel. You're drinking the shit that's designed to make you run up a mountain, and you're sitting in a chair all day.
It's so crazy. So, hey, if you were going to buy a double gulp and then you're going to run 10 miles or 20 miles to work, hey, I have no problem with that.
Go ahead.
That's perfect fuel. You're using it for the right way. That'll probably be maybe the fastest 10 miles you've ever run in your life. But if you're just getting in there, sitting in your car, just driving to work, you're doing so much harm to your body.
Yeah, you really are. And I think we need to reemphasize that in our entire blood supply. Like, I'm not a small guy, even you. 4 grams in our entire body. That's nothing. Think of like a little like teaspoon in your house. Go fill it up with sugar. That's it.
And 4 grams of sugar, like you're getting, it's so easy to get 4 grams of sugar from anything.
Oh, from vegetables.
Yeah, that's a low carb food.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's crazy.
So, do you want to tell us what happens when you drink soda?
Yeah, so the whole reaction starts, you know, you drink soda, within about 30 minutes, your blood sugar will rise, and this signals your body to produce insulin. And you're going to hear us talk a lot about insulin over the next, I don't know, hour or so, because that really is a hormone that gets out of whack when we do these high sugar meals, these high sugar drinks, or this high sugar lifestyle. Insulin is a hormone that shuttles that sugar, that blood glucose, out of our blood and into our tissues. All our tissues, blood, liver, fat. It gets it out of the blood because in the blood it's toxic. So when carbohydrates hit our upper intestines, they trigger a hormone called glucose-dependent insulinotropic polypeptide, or GIP. And normally I wouldn't talk about this polypeptide, but it will come into play when we talk about donuts. So just trying to remember that. So when we have carbohydrates, GIP is signaled, and this is like the master glucose sensor. This hormone heads to the pancreas and to our fat cells. In the pancreas, it triggers the release of insulin. And again, that's designed to get blood glucose out of our blood. And then also heads to our fat cells and tells them to get ready for storage. It tells them, like, hey, things are coming your way, get primed to expand. And so with this high insulin, it tells our pancreas to stop producing glucagon. And glucagon is another hormone. Think of like insulin as an alpha, glucagon as a beta. And actually, I think it's the opposite of that. Insulin is a beta cell, right?
It's produced by beta cells.
Yeah, I said that backwards. Insulin produced by the beta cells in the pancreas. Glucagon is produced by the alpha cells in our pancreas. They kind of live right next to each other. So insulin brings glucose down. Glucagon brings glucose up. So, of course, our body is, we just ingested a bunch of carbohydrates, and our body's going to say, hey, stop releasing glucagon, stop producing glucose. It makes sense. You know, we just ate a bunch of glucose. There's no reason for us to produce glucose. Insulin also tells our body to stop mobilizing fat. And again, this is because we have all this fuel coming in. We don't need to be producing more. We need to be focusing on getting this shit out of our blood as fast as possible. What happens in the prime, I guess, negative effect that occurs right away when you drink these sodas is something called glycation. And that happens because glucose itself is kind of a sticky molecule. So we get a blood sugar rise, and now we have a bunch of blood sugar in our blood, or a bunch of glucose in our blood. And glycation occurs. It's the sugar bouncing around and reacting with proteins. Anything in the blood, any protein can be affected by this. And when these sugars bind to these proteins, they can become glycated. And it's just the presence or the binding of a sugar and a protein without the presence of an enzyme. Because in the presence of an enzyme, that binding is orderly. That binding is secured, and it happens in the right fashion at the right times to produce the right byproducts. But when it doesn't happen with the enzyme, it's messy, and it kind of hinders that protein from doing its job properly. And so when that happens, we talked about LDL in the last podcast being oxidized. So when LDL, just a lipoprotein in our blood, is glycated, that becomes oxidized as well. So a high sugar diet increases blood sugar, and it increases the oxidation rate of LDL. And we talked about before, oxidized LDL is one of the prime drivers for heart disease. So glycation is a horrible thing. You don't want it to occur. When glycation can be reversed, though, if blood sugar levels become low and our body needs that sugar, it will unbind those glycated products. But how many people have, I don't know, cereal for breakfast, and then a lunch they have a sandwich, and then for dinner they have pasta? How common is that?
If you throw in some sugary snacks in between, maybe a bag of M&M's because...
Or canola bar.
You're not... I highly doubt you're going to be going 4 or 5 hours in between each meal if you're going through this much glucose at each meal.
Exactly. So most people, especially in the standard American diet, are going to have high blood sugar throughout the entire day. They're never going to let their body kind of... Or their blood sugar dip down low to get these glycated products separated. So eventually what happens is these glycated products will eventually turn into something called AGEs. So advanced glycated end products. And that's the real problem. Once that happens, they don't unbind. These are now permanent structures that our body has to deal with. And these AGEs, A-G-E-S, actually kind of, there's something called cross-linking where they all kind of combine, they all kind of clump together. And they accumulate in our membranes. So they accumulate in our kidneys, in our eyes, in our nerve endings, and the lining of our arteries. And we talked about before, what does sugar do to our kidneys?
It just kind of, so there's a filter in our kidneys. That's what our kidneys do. It clogs up that filter.
Exactly. So these AGEs damage our kidneys. What's a prime, I guess, symptom of diabetes? People, what, lose their eyesight?
Yeah, we talked about that with Mike in that interview.
Exactly.
Once we got his blood sugar stabilized, because didn't he have, what was it, like 400? Didn't he have like one?
He was almost 600.
Yeah, that's insanely high. That's so crazy. Yeah. And then once he, you know, went on a low-carb diet, balanced it out, got his blood sugar lower again, his eyesight came back. His doctors were even surprised. Like, what? You can do that?
Exactly. Yep, exactly. And then you ever heard of diabetic neuropathy? So that nerve pain. So that happens when these AGEs accumulate in our nerve endings. And then obviously we've talked about heart disease a million times. These AGEs can accumulate in the lining of our arteries. And that's really... I guess that happens a lot because the protein collagen is very susceptible to glycation and cross-linking. So think like skin, joints, arteries, even our lungs, they all become stiffer over time. And even if someone like me or Tom or anyone out there whose diet's really on point, this glycation, it's happening all the time. So you also hear there's like stories out there with like surgeons and doing autopsies. And in a young person, they can take out the aorta from their chest, and they can blow it up almost like a balloon. It's very flexible. The tissue is kind of supple. And that makes sense, right? You want your body to be flexible to respond to changes. But if they take an aorta out of an older person, they can't blow it up at all. It's almost like made of glass. And if you put enough pressure in, it will just break. And that comes from glycation and our arteries and just our soft tissues becoming more and more stiff over time. It's just a process of aging. It's just accelerated when you have these high carbohydrate diets. One of the major issues with soda, specifically just talking about sugar, is sugar is half glucose and half fructose. Now, glucose itself isn't the worst thing in the world. Like when I make meal plans or we make meal plans, one of the main carbohydrate sources we list is white rice. You know, I'm actually a fan of white rice. If I ever eat carbs, that's what it is. And that's because it's just starch. It's just long glucose chains. Glucose, it can be used by every cell in our body. So when you eat a bunch of glucose, that load is kind of spread out. The problem with fructose is fructose can't be used by any cell in the body. So it all goes to our liver at once. Just like if you were drinking like beer or alcohol, it all goes to your liver at once. And we all know that having a bunch of alcohol a lot will lead to liver damage. Like that's a known thing. That's not a crazy sentence.
Yeah, there's two types of liver disease. Most of it's called alcohol fatty liver. Then the other one is non-alcoholic fatty liver disease.
Exactly. What do you think non-alcoholic fatty liver disease is promoted from?
I guess would be fructose and especially sodas, anything with high fructose corn syrup in it, those type of drinks.
Exactly. Yeah, high fructose corn syrup is even worse than sugar because it's actually 55% fructose, 45% glucose. And actually that percentage of fructose can be higher in some instances because fructose is actually what's sweet in this sugar. Glucose itself is not sweet. Like if you ever had a glucose powder and kind of like just took a spoonful of it, it would taste fairly bland. It's not sweet. That's why you can't add like fructose powder to, I don't know, like a dessert recipe. The dessert would not turn out good. You need sugar because of the fructose, that's what tastes good to us. So fructose is bad because it all hits the liver at once. And it also is 10 times more likely to produce those ages, advanced glycated end products over glucose. It's way more sticky. And this is something I actually just learned. I knew that about fructose, but I was like, how come that doesn't happen with glucose? Glucose, it turns out of all the sugars, is the least reactive of the sugars. Even though all the sugars are very chemically unstable, that's why they're good fuel sources. Our body can mobilize them and oxidize them very easily. But of course, if you think about it from an evolutionary standpoint, our body would pick the sugar that did the least damage in our blood. Right? Doesn't that make sense?
Oh, of course. I mean, why would you want to have a lot of something that's harmful?
Exactly.
That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, that's why our body is not going to use glucose. I mean, fructose as a primary sugar source is going to use glucose. So, yeah. So, and the ages that fructose does produce are harder for the body to break down. So, and it even oxidizes LDL at a faster rate. So the damage fructose does is, you know, tenfold what glucose does. That's happening. You know, you drink that soda, this glycation is happening, all these tissues, all these proteins in our blood are being damaged. Now that fructose hits our liver and it'll honestly kind of floods our liver all at once, all the mitochondria get hit. And once our mitochondria become full, it will start spilling out citrate. And citrate will lead to the production of VLDL and triglycerides. So when you think of de novo lipogenesis, a creation of new fat. So now we have all this fructose in our liver. Our mitochondria are full. They can't run. We only have a certain number of mitochondria in our liver. If their TCA cycles are all being used up and our body's still pushing in more fuel in the form of fructose, it spills out citrate and then it creates more fat. And also, the fructose causes our liver to become a little bit insulin resistant. So our liver will uptake glucose less efficiently and also turn glucose into glycogen in our liver less efficiently. So our liver is producing fat in the form of VLDL and triglycerides, and it's forcing our pancreas to produce more insulin because now our liver is now insulin resistant to get that glucose into the liver. So it's a horrible combo of increased sugar in our glucose in our blood supply from the glucose, increase triglycerides in our blood supply from the fructose, and also increase insulin from the insulin resistance from the fructose metabolism in the liver itself. It's kind of like the trifecta of death. You know what I mean?
And this is happening all day long, every single day in the standard American diet.
Crazy.
So like if you were just to eat fruit, you would eat one apple and you'd probably be pretty satiated.
Yeah.
And it would also take you, I don't know, a good 5 minutes to eat an apple.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you drink like one can of soda, you're actually consuming more sugar than in that apple. And who just drinks one soda? Like I can have 10 sodas right now and not even feel satiated.
Yep.
So you're able to do this at such an alarming rate. So like an apple is a good example of just like a natural way that we would be getting, you know, sugar into our diet. But we'd only get a little bit. We wouldn't be getting 10 times that amount.
Yeah, and it would be paired with fiber. It wouldn't be processed. And that makes a huge difference. You know, the speed of delivery of the sugar makes a huge difference. And so that's a horrible combo, right? That's like a recipe to get fat. Is this fructose? The way fructose is metabolized is a recipe to get fat. Increased glucose in the blood, increased triglycerides in the blood, and increased insulin. With all that, you're not burning fat for fuel. You are storing fat for fuel 100%. One of the measures that I looked into was A1C. That's a marker that a lot of people know, at least if you're diabetic or you have anyone in your life that's diabetic. They measure A1C. And what is A1C? And that's actually a measure of glycated hemoglobin. Our hemoglobin is just red blood cells. That's what carries oxygen around our blood and kind of our fuel supply. That can get glycated pretty readily. And red blood cells hang around for maybe about 3 months in our blood supply before they're recycled and new ones are created. So A1C is a good marker for glycation over the course of maybe 3 months or so. Since that's a good marker of like a high carbohydrate diet, it's actually a good marker for all-cause mortality, which is basically what are your odds of dying from anything, which is really what we should be cared about, which we all should care about, all-cause mortality, not really your cause for cancer. If it's not lethal, who cares? But there was a study done, and it looked at women and A1C numbers. So a good A1C would be something 5% or under. So with these women, and again, all-cause death, when they had an A1C that was under 5%, it was 2 out of 100, so about 2%. With an A1C over 7%, and mind you, that's only 2% difference. It's not a crazy, crazy jump. It was 25 out of 100. So that's a 12x jump over a 5% A1C. That's a huge difference. When, from like a statistical standpoint, 12% is a big number.
Yeah, that's an alarming rate. Just like it, just a little bit of a change.
Yeah.
That's like everything in our body has a nice little Goldilocks zone.
Yes.
And then that, you know, if you get 2% away from that, you're fucked.
Well, because the glycation is happening in us right now. It's happening in me, it's happening in Tom, it's happening in you. But our body is perfectly capable of handling a little bit of glycation. It's okay. But when this shit gets thrown out of whack, real consequences occur.
Yeah, so if you're looking at, if you get your A1C measured, if you're over 7%, you need to address that immediately.
Yeah, you really do.
And if you're 5 or under, good. If you're between that 5 and 7, maybe you're not technically sick by, like, standard American regulations, but you should still do what you can to get that under 5.
That should be a good goal. And actually, now's a good time to stop for a second and hear from me a little bit about our meal plans. TNTWellnessAndNutrition.com, Whole Food Nutrition Rediscovered. If you are struggling looking to improve your health or optimize your lifestyle, you can sign up for a custom meal plan on our website, TNTWellnessAndNutrition.com. Back to today's topic.
So now we're going to talk about insulin resistance. So unfortunately, it's not fully understood why cells become insulin resistant. The most popular theory is that your fat and that extra body fat leads you to become insulin resistant. And neither one of us believe that's true.
No.
And we'll discuss why. I think you get fat because you're insulin resistant. You're not insulin resistant because you're fat.
Yeah, it's kind of a chicken and the egg thing. So
the best theory that we both agreed with is that when you consume a lot of sugar, there's going to be increased triglycerides in your blood. So the reason that triglycerides are higher is because there's all this sugar in your blood as well. So cells are going to be using that sugar and not the fat, because the sugar is a lot more deadly than the triglycerides. So your body wants to get rid of those first. So now that you have two fuel sources available, now you're starting to confuse cells. Like, okay, what do I use? And then also, most cells are going to become, they're going to start down-regulating the amount of insulin receptors that they have. So instead of having, let's say, 10 receptors on a cell, now they're going to have 5. Because there's just so much glucose coming in all the time. So you're going to have fewer receptors. So like that's what's starting to happen. That's why you're becoming insulin resistant.
Exactly.
So when we consume a lot of food, when we consume a food with a lot of sugar or just carbohydrates in general, the beta cells of our pancreas produce insulin to shuttle that glucose out of our blood and into our cells. It's to keep our blood glucose in that nice little Goldilocks zone known as homeostasis. So, you know, we want to keep it within that like 60 to 100 range, somewhere around there. If you're over 100, that's usually considered diabetes. Under 60, You know, actually, I don't really know if under 60 is too much of an issue because of all this, like, carnivore movement thing. I'm starting to see people with a lot lower blood sugars being healthy.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, it's been shown in labs that people have gotten their blood sugars extremely low and been perfectly fine as long as their body was producing ketones to make up the difference. And, I forget how low they went, but it was low.
Well, I'm sure those are sedentary individuals. They're probably not doing a lot of exercise at their blood sugar.
Yeah, they were sitting in just a lab, and they had it pretty much just infused with insulin, getting their blood sugar as low as possible and waiting for them to pass out. And it never happened because these people were producing a lot of ketones.
There's that nice little range. And that's homeostasis. Everything in our body is to get us back into homeostasis. That's why everything occurs.
Yeah.
So when we have high levels of insulin, that causes cellular receptors to respond to that insulin to downregulate and the excessive stimulation over time. So that just means that there's just so much insulin all the time, day after day after day, hour after hour. So there's just going to be fewer receptors because there's only so much that they can use and they're already maxed out. So a good way to think of this is like think of those cartoons where somebody's working at like an assembly line and then somebody just hits a switch and that assembly line just goes maximum speed. And that person starts to become overworked. And then once they become overworked, just chaos ensues. They're not able to put together that toy right. There's toys with missing heads. There's one where an arm should be where the head is. And just like the whole belt just like backs up. So that's what's going on. So the assembly line belt is a high amount of sugar. Like that faster the belt, that's just more and more sugar coming in all the time. And then that overwhelmed worker that can't keep up is the pancreas. Because there's only so much it can do. There's only so much insulin it can produce. We only have one pancreas. And the thing doesn't get bigger. It doesn't get stronger. It's like, it is what it is. And then that chaos that ensues is basically just what chronic disease is going to pop up first.
Yep, exactly. And something I want to mention, during this process, what's happening to how people measure like diabetes is blood glucose. Once your blood glucose gets out of range, that's we consider you diabetic. But during this whole phase he just talked about, your blood glucose would still be normal. It would still be in that 80 to 100 range because your pancreas is producing enough insulin to respond to the signal of the sugar. But this damage is still being done. That's why classifying diabetes as a disease of blood sugar is wrong. It's not a disease of blood sugar. It's a disease of insulin.
Yeah, that's a good point. Because once you're diabetic, the damage has already been
done.
You're
fucked.
Yeah, like that's catching it too late.
Way too late.
And I hate the term pre-diabetes.
Me too.
Because pre-diabetes basically just means that you have diabetes. You're just not far along yet for there to be enough damage done. But really, like that's the time you really should be addressing it. Because, like, hey, you're trending in a bad way.
Or it's too early for them to make money off you. Because we don't have really a lot of meds for pre-diabetics, right? We can't put someone with a blood sugar of 110 on insulin, right? But if you're at 200, we can put you on insulin.
Yeah.
That's a little more nefarious way to look at it, but it might be, you know?
Yeah, that's a very good point.
Yeah.
And yeah, so the result is going to be chronically high blood glucose and chronically high insulin levels. Both are just horrible things. And then what disease pops up first? I mean, I can't really tell you that. That's anybody's guess. Your body is going to tell you.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's a lot of genetic factors going on if you're going to get heart disease, Alzheimer's, diabetes. But I mean, be prepared. Something's coming. And something I thought about and is a little, I guess, an angle that people don't think about is insulin resistance being a good thing and a good thing in a bad situation because if you're having a high carb diet all the time, you know, like I said, cereal for breakfast, sandwich for lunch, pasta for dinner, and that's your life after about 40 years or so, you better be happy you become insulin resistant because you're in a state of hyperinsulinemia. Your insulin is elevated all the time. Insulin's job is to make your blood sugar go lower. So say you're producing a ton of insulin and you skipped, one day you were busy, you skipped lunch, right? It's been about 6 hours since your last meal. What's going to happen to your blood glucose? You haven't ate and your blood insulin's through the roof.
Oh, it's going to go crazy low.
It's going to crash. And you hear people talk about this. Like, oh, my blood sugar is low. I'm getting, you know, cold sweats. I'm getting jittery. I don't feel good. Guess what? That's not normal. Nothing about that is normal. So you better be thankful you did become insulin resistant because if you didn't, if you skipped those meals for an extended period of time for whatever reason, your blood sugar would drop really low and hypoglycemia, low blood sugar, is deadly. It's not like this high blood sugar where it's just damage done over weeks, days, months, years. Hypoglycemia, you die.
You know, what's funny is like a lot of the diabetics are encouraged to have something sweet along with them, like just in case this ever does happen. But honestly, how much willpower do you have? How long do you think you're diabetic? Mm-hmm. You have a candy bar in your pocket for this scenario right here.
Emergency.
Well, is that emergency going to pop up before it's an emergency?
Sure. No, you're going to be real hungry real quick. Yeah.
Like, I don't know how long just, like, my willpower is strong enough. If I had a candy bar in my pocket right now, like, I'm not a sugar addict by any means.
Exactly.
But if I had that candy bar in my pocket, like, I'm going to eat it. Like, there's no way I'm going to wait for it to become a severe case. I just think that's something that's kind of funny.
It is funny.
So, yeah, that's not working. That's
no, not it's not working. Yeah, it's not smart at all.
So, I guess we'll just tackle these diseases in alphabetical order, starting with Alzheimer's, a.k.a. type 3 diabetes. So this basically occurs when our brains are less affected by using glucose as a fuel source. So Dr. Joseph McCorla is where I got most of my information. Alzheimer's is intricately connected to insulin resistance. They correlate so well together. So yeah, you can't say correlation is causation, but since that is there, there's more to look at. And we're still doing a lot more research in this area. And so there's two things that are happening inside the brain. So the insulin receptors in the brain are becoming damaged and can no longer recognize insulin. So that's one thing. And then also the insulin producers of our brain become damaged, so they're producing less insulin. So it's not the same type of diabetes as it's going on in the rest of our body, but it is twofold. So now they're like, you're not able to, so the cells downregulate, so they have less receptors, and then also they're producing more, producing less insulin. So you're just getting less glucose into your cells, and that's why, like, it's a slow degradation over time.
Yeah, and I don't know if anyone out there has been around people with Alzheimer's. It's a sad thing. Just think if you go home one day and your mom doesn't recognize you. That's heartbreaking.
Oh, I know. It's so sad. My granddad had it, and it was just kind of, he just slowly deteriorated. Every single time I'd see him, it was just worse and worse. Yeah, it's a horrible way to go, and I think that's got to be one of the worst ways to go. Just like you having loved ones around you, they're doing all they can to help you, and you don't recognize them, you don't know who they are, nothing like that.
Yeah, that's sad, and that sucks, and that's definitely caused by insulin resistance. Like, it's true. There's an author out there, her name's Amy Berger. Is that name just Berger?
I think it is.
Yeah, just Amy Berger, and she actually wrote a book, I think, called The Alzheimer's Antidote, and I would check her out. She's a stud on Alzheimer's. She knows a lot, and she's come to this conclusion as well, that insulin-resistant and a carbohydrate-based diet is really promoting Alzheimer's. And I agree with that. And something specifically with the brain, there are cells in our body that require glucose for fuel. They're just 100%. They cannot use ketones. They do not have mitochondria. And a lot of those are in our brain. Like, neurons are so small, they have to use glucose. So when our brain becomes insulin-resistant, that's why they're affected so greatly. And you get a person who all of a sudden can't recognize their wife who they've been married to for 50 years. That's a huge thing, you know?
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. And then just like the glucose itself can be damaging to your brain too. It's a leading cause of dementia. It damages structures such as the hippocampus. Like, it's a major thing just having that increased glucose in what, our most precious organ.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'd rather have my liver go than my brain go. Seriously.
Yeah, I mean, because then, like, you don't even know what's going on. I mean, maybe that's not that bad of a way to go.
You know, maybe it's not bad for you.
Yeah.
But for everyone around you, it sucks.
Yeah. So the next one, diabetes. I mean, this is
classic.
Yeah, this is the most obvious one. So, like we talked about earlier, cells start to downregulate, so they have less insulin receptors, so they're not able to use glucose as effectively. And then just the damage of the insulin itself, like hyperinsulinemia and insulin resistance, it's not a disease of blood sugar. It's that the elevated blood sugar is a symptom of the diabetes. It's not the cause.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I see this all the time, like where I'm at, where I'm working. Everyone thinks diabetes is a disease of sugar. It is not a disease of sugar. It is a disease of insulin. And I think the only reason we think of it as a disease of sugar is because we can treat sugar. We can't treat insulin, or at least we can't treat insulin with a medicine produced by a pharmaceutical company. You know who can treat insulin? Yourself. You change your diet and you can treat your insulin levels.
And the cure to pretty much all the diseases that we're mentioning is going to be a ketogenic diet.
Yes, it is.
Because there are, maybe not every cell in your brain can use ketones, but a lot of them can.
Oh, the vast majority.
And a lot of them love it. We've talked about the benefits of fasting, and how smart we feel while we're fasting.
Yep.
And that's because, not because we have high blood glucose, it's because we have high blood ketones. So yeah, I mean, like, yeah, there's a easy solution to all these. So the next one we'll go into is heart disease. So blood glucose, like what Tyson was talking about earlier, is that it glycates everything. And then also, like, blood glucose, like, it's not a free ride through our blood. It's not like it's perfectly round. Like, it causes a lot of damage while it's circling around.
It's like a boulder rolling downhill.
That's why we have insulin to get it out of there. We don't want it just staying in our blood, and we don't want it staying elevated all the time. So it's causing damage to the endothelial wall of our blood cells, and that results in atherosclerosis, the leading cause of myocardial infarctions, also known as heart attacks.
Yeah, so the guy I really leaned on to look up as far as research for this little section was Ivor Cummins, and he recently did, I didn't actually add any notes on this because it was a little too fresh, like I couldn't dive too deep into it to actually talk about it, but if you know anything, I think it's called a glycocalyx, it's, you know, in our small intestines, we have the brush border.
Yes.
That's where nutrient absorption occurs, right? It's very similar in our arteries. There's a thin hair-like layer around our arteries, and it kind of protects our arteries, and sugar destroys that. And it's just another layer saying, like, sugar is bad for our arteries, and Ivor Cummins goes into that. So if you know, if you're out there, you know anything about glycocalyx, let me know. Shoot me some links. You know, I'd like to learn more about it. Another person I looked into was Dr. Joseph Kraft. And he pioneered the glucose tolerance with insulin assay method, which actually shows your insulin status. So it shows if you're insulin sensitive or you're insulin resistant. And of course, you want to be insulin sensitive. That's a sign of overall health. So he measured over 14,000 patients' insulin response to glucose. And his conclusion was that those with cardiovascular disease not identified with diabetes are simply undiagnosed. Based on, this is a quote from him, based on my several thousand autopsy examinations, the pathology of diabetes is vascular. The initial manifestation of the pathology is atherosclerosis. The pathology begins when the blood sugars are normal. And I think that's like mic drop. That is just him. This guy knows. He is like the OG insulin guy. He's like, your blood sugars do not have to be out of whack for you to be suffering the negative effects of diabetes. That's what all these people, oh, I'm pre-diabetic, oh, my sugar's only 110. This shit's happening right now inside your body. And there's a study I looked at called the EuroAspire study. And this took random samples of thousands of people. So about 5,000 plus people with heart disease across 24 countries in Europe, ranging from 18 years old to 80 years old. And they tested various blood glucose metrics. So pretty much like fasting glucose, and their A1C, and say, okay, how many of these people with heart disease are diabetic? And it turned out 76% of these people were diabetic. 76%. And mind you, they did not test insulin, which is a true measure of diabetes. They tested blood sugar markers. So of the other 24%, how many of them were in this state we talked about earlier, where their insulin's through the roof, but they're still able to produce enough to keep their blood sugar in check? I would bet the other 24%.
Or at least 20 of them, you know? Like, that's an alarming rate.
Yeah, that's crazy. It's just, I mean, it's so bad.
And yet saturated fat is the cause of heart disease, not sugar.
Oh, God. I know. We're fighting an uphill battle. We really are. And another study I pulled up, which I thought was actually really, really interesting, and because it's pretty, if I tell you sugar's bad and you talk about just, you can just repeat what I said word for word about glycation, that makes sense, right? Damaging this, producing reactive oxygen species, producing ages, things like that makes sense. But insulin itself, how is like insulin itself promoting atherosclerosis? How is it promoting the promotion of plaque? So, and this shit, these are not new studies. This study was from 1949. And so what they did is they took a group of dogs, these type 1 diabetic dogs, so pretty much their pancreas did not produce insulin, and they fed them a high cholesterol diet. Pretty much infused these fuckers with so much cholesterol they were going to explode, right? And so the dogs that were type 1 diabetic did not develop any plaques in their arteries whatsoever, right? So it didn't matter, all the LDL in their blood supply didn't matter. But when they infused these dogs with insulin, plaque did develop. And that kind of makes sense, right? Because insulin is a storage hormone. So when you have these, you're drinking the soda, you're getting all this fructose, your body's producing this fat, it's oxidizing this LDL, you have all this shit in your blood supply, and now your insulin's elevated. So you have all this crap, and you have the hormone, the signal telling your body to store it. So of course it's going to store it in that endothelial lining in your arteries, producing plaque. So insulin is required, it seems like, and I like this study because it's in dogs, and dogs, as far as their GI tract and their just blood supply, is very similar to ours. So it seems like insulin is a main player in the promotion of plaque.
Yeah, that's crazy. Dogs are probably one of the better animals that we could be testing on. I mean, they're man's best friend. They've been living alongside us for so long. Like you said, our GI tracts are very identical, are very similar. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely much better than a rat study, and we can't do these types of testing on humans.
Well, actually, I don't even think we can do this study today.
Are dogs, too much man's best friend now?
Exactly. Yeah. We couldn't even do this study today, and that sucks. Because as far as animal studies go, if you see something that's like on a dog, or like pigs are pretty good too, look at those. But no, we can't. We have to do them on like mice. And for some things, mice and rats, they work, you know, kind of similar to us, but not nearly as good as a dog. It's just that dogs are cute, so we can't like put them through tests.
I mean, yeah, I agree that dogs are cute. I got two of them.
Oh, I'm pro dog for sure, but guess what? Let's sacrifice a few of those fuckers. So you know what I mean? So we can get some good tests done. So another chronic disease that pops up with increased blood glucose, increased blood insulin, is hypertension. The increased blood glucose causes our blood pressure to rise because our blood vessels are narrowing from the increased plaque buildup. And of course, we talked about just before with heart disease, with the plaque buildup, it obviously narrows our artery, and eventually the plaque breaks off, causes a clot, causes a heart attack, causes a stroke. That's a bad thing. So the only thing, the caveat with this is, in a normal person, like someone like me, if you're out there, you exercise a lot, you eat a pretty healthy diet, when insulin is, you know, released, so when I eat a bunch of protein, insulin will be released, naturally, it actually causes our endothelial cells, those cells in our like arteries and our lining our blood vessels, to release nitric oxide. And I'm sure, you know, gym bros out there know about NO2 and stuff like that. They get better pumps when nitric oxide released. And that's true because it causes our blood vessels to expand. And it makes sense because insulin is a response we get when we eat something, right? It's telling our body, hey, fuel's coming in. Let's expand our blood vessels so we get these nutrients to where they need to be as smoothly and quickly as possible. But again, we talked about insulin resistance earlier. When these cells are constantly, constantly stimulated by insulin, they no longer release the nitric oxide that they used to. So that in itself will lead to hypertension as well. It'll cause a narrowing of our arteries, a constricting of the smooth muscle around our arteries, not allowing them to be flexible, not allowing them to be pliable, and that can lead to hypertension.
Yeah, so we just tackled the number one killer in the country, heart disease, and those are the two primary causes.
Yeah.
So let's get to the next major killer in our country, which is cancer. So when glucose is metabolized, the harmful byproducts themselves damage the mitochondria of the cell, which is a problem in itself. And then if insulin is chronically high, autophagy, that's when we break down damaged cells for pretty much parts, mostly amino acids. That's not going to be occurring at a fast enough rate because the demand isn't there anymore since you're always putting fuel into your body. So now those damaged cells aren't being broken down, they're not being recycled. So that allows these damaged cells to reproduce. And what are cancer? Cancers are damaged cells reproducing at an alarming rate. And not only are we just creating the environment for them to be created in the first place, now cancer cells use glucose as a primary fuel source. So now you're giving them all the fuel that they could possibly ever need. So they're just put in the perfect environment to thrive.
Yeah, and that's a huge point. And just think, like, normally, like, for all of us, our just living, just oxidizing food, producing ATP is damaging, right? We are damaging our mitochondria, we are damaging our GI tract, so our neurons are dying every day, right? We listen to loud music, the cells in our inner ear are dying, I get it, right? But if we allow this autophagy to occur, our body senses these dying cells, these dysfunctional mitochondria. And it goes, okay, this one's not working too good. Let's recycle it. Boom, let's make a new one. And that's kind of how our body just repairs itself naturally. And it keeps us pretty much young and healthy for a very extended period of time. But if we don't allow autophagy to occur, these dysfunctional mitochondria will replicate when they never should. They should have been taken down and recycled whatever, 10 cycles ago. They shouldn't have been allowed to replicate, but now they are, because that autophagy signal is never reached if we keep our insulin levels high all the time.
Yeah, it's just crazy. Like, that's just the perfect environment for it. The damage in the first place, not allowing them to be recycled and allowing them to reproduce, and then just giving them all the energy that they could possibly need.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a perfect cocktail for cancer. It really is. And I think what you first said first is glucose metabolism in general does damage mitochondria more than a ketone-based diet or a fat-based diet. That is a good little point as well, and it's one of the reasons why I don't supplement with glucose, even though I'm a person who could, because I'm so active. If I eat glucose, especially like pre-workout, I wouldn't get fat. You wouldn't get fat.
Oh, no, not at all.
You know what I mean? But it comes with a price, and that price is kind of small. We don't notice it when our mitochondria die, obviously. But I know that it does come with a price. That's why I don't.
Yeah, and something that you mentioned earlier, just life in general is damaging our mitochondria. Mm-hmm. Just like the different toxins that we're breathing in, we're surrounded by stuff damaging our mitochondria.
Let's not add to it.
Yeah, exactly. We need to limit that as much as possible.
Yeah.
And a good way to just kind of negate a lot of these effects is do time-restricted eating, like both of us do, mm-hmm. times of fasting. You don't need to do a 7-day fast, but you know, even if you're just doing 18 hours, 16 hours in between meals, and also exercise. And if you do the two combined, exercise while you're in a fasted state, you're increasing the demand for autophagy.
Yep.
Because like you're depleted of all these different amino acids that your body's going to need. So it's going to have to pull them from somewhere. So that's a nice quick little recipe to increase your autophagy and prevent this from happening.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, I love working out in a fasted state. I love it.
I honestly think that's what we're designed for. Because if you look at every other animal, when do they exercise?
When they're hungry.
Yeah, so that's fasted, pretty much. Like, yep. A lion doesn't hunt right after it ate.
No, it's chilling, hanging out. Yeah.
Most, like, herd animals, they're not flying. Birds don't fly south for the winter because they're full. They're flying south because they're hungry. They want food.
Exactly.
So if you just look throughout the animal kingdom, everything else is exercising fasted. So it's got to be beneficial. So that's the way I kind of look at it.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. It's a good way to look at it.
So the last one is obesity. So kind of like how I talked about at the beginning, how there is a popular belief that obesity causes insulin resistance. But this is why I don't think that's true. I think obesity is a result of being insulin resistant first. So when insulin levels are high in our blood, our bodies are triggered to store fat. Because why would we be using fat for fuel if we have a heightened, like a lot of blood sugar?
Because what's the only cue our body gets to produce a shit ton of insulin? It's glucose.
Glucose.
It's just, exactly. That's the only cue our body would get to raise insulin high.
Yeah, so like, why would we be using body fat if we have all this glucose available? So we're going to be using that glucose, because we can store a shit ton more fat than we can store glucose. We can store glucose, but I think it's about 2,000, like...
calories worth.
Yeah, which isn't much.
No.
But fat, I don't know if there is an amount. Like, I've seen, like, my 600-pound life.
There's some big old folks out
there. There's, yeah, I don't know if there is an amount of fat that we can, like, stop using.
Yeah.
And so, if we're storing fat, then, you know, we're just going to get fatter and fatter over time. And then also, that extra glucose will eventually get turned into fat.
Yep.
That's not the primary effect of extra glucose. Generally, or most of the time when you're storing fat, you're going to have some sort of fat in your diet. And that's going to get stored as fat first. And then it's you just keep eating high sugary foods over time. Yeah, that glucose will get converted into fat.
It will. And especially fructose will get turned into fat way quicker than glucose does. And that's just how fructose is metabolized. And that's why soda specifically is a horrible 1-2 combo. So
there is an evolutionary advantage to this, but only in a short period of time.
You mean getting fat?
Yes. So the best example I could think of is a bear. So when do bears eat fruit?
When they wake up from hibernation, right? They're getting ready. When they're getting ready.
Yeah, and that also coincides with when fruits are available. So fruits become ripe generally at the end of summer, early fall. That's when most fruits are available. So bears are going to be loading up on as much fructose as they possibly can. So their body is triggered to start using that glucose for fuel and store all the fat. They don't stop eating fat. They're still eating fat, but now they're just supplementing with these berries so they can store more of that fat, becoming insulin resistant for a short period of time. And then they're able to store all this fat, and then they can sleep and they won't die from being starved to death for the few months that they're hibernating.
Yeah, because then now they have all this body fat on them to use as fuel as they're hibernating.
And we're not that different. Hey, the reason that they hibernate is because there's not a lot of food available where they live during wintertime. Like, hey, you know, that's a good thing because bears generally tend to live higher up than most humans do. I don't want bears following deer down south during the winter months. Like, I don't want bears coming to my city tracking down the deer. Like, no, that's a good thing. Stay up there, go to sleep for a few months instead of following your prey.
Yeah, especially when we were, like, messing around with bears and bow and arrows. I don't think we appreciate how big a polar bear is or how big a grizzly bear is, but if that thing wants to eat you, good luck trying to fight it off.
I mean, honestly, like, guns today still have a hard
time. Hard time.
Yeah. Like, I never want to come across a grizzly bear.
No, me either, man. Crazy. Their things are probably the most deadly animal on Earth.
And then, hey, we're not that... Our metabolism, our biology isn't that much different than a bear's. So, for wintertime, food becomes scarce. There's pretty much no vegetables, no fruit. Hey, nuts have a long shelf life, so maybe you can store up some nuts for, you know, a long period of time. Some fruits you can store for quite a while, too. But you're not getting any more from the land. So you need to store up a lot of fat so you can survive wintertime. Because you're going to be fasting a lot more during wintertime than you would be during the summer months.
You're just going to be forced to.
Yeah, exactly. There's just no choice. So there is an evolutionary advantage to this. But the problem is that we're living in a state of summer every single day for 40 plus years or however long you've been on this planet. So what's supposed to be happening for 2 to 3 months is happening for 12 months forever. Like, it's a crazy amount of time.
It is.
So yeah, this is kind of a good thing in small doses, but too much of a good thing is definitely a bad thing in this case.
Yep, exactly. And you talk about a lot with seasonal dieting. So when summer comes around and berries become available, you plan to consume more berries, right?
Exactly. The farmer's market is, that's my trigger. The farmer's market starts up next week. Uh-huh. That's when I'm going to start eating more berries and stuff like that.
Do you expect to put on a little bit of body weight?
Yeah, I should be.
You should be. Exactly. That's like a natural response, right? And it's just, yeah, that combo, man. You get the insulin, you get the blood glucose high, you get the fructose, which forces your body to produce more fat itself. Welcome to Chubby Town. You know what I mean? You're getting fat. That's just what it is.
And it's not just the fat. Like, you're getting diabetes, you're getting cancer, you're getting heart disease.
Yeah.
Like, the fat is just what you can see. That's what you can see from the outside.
Exactly.
And hey, you know what? It is a good thing that you are getting fat, because that's a signal that this stuff is happening.
Yeah.
What's even worse is those people that don't store fat and that all this stuff is happening too. Because not everybody's going to be on a high-carb diet and get fat. That doesn't happen to everybody. So, like, the people that do get fat, hey, there's a much better advantage to that than being skinny and having this cancer progress for so long or this heart disease progress for so long, because people look at you, you're thin, you must be healthy, but that's not the case.
Oh, man. Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. There's actually a lady, well, she's not a lady, she's my age, but someone in my wife's family who is, like, a sugar addict. I'm talking every day, candy boxes in her pocket, in her purse, like just 24/7, all the time. And guess what? She is as thin as a light post. And people will think she's healthy, obviously, because she's thin. And I don't have the, I don't know, I'm not brave enough to tell her that she's not healthy. Yeah. I just kind of like leave it alone. But I talked to my wife about it, and I was like, there's no way this girl is healthy. There's no way. She lives off sugar.
I mean, maybe she has better genetics, so she's like less predisposed to a lot of these diseases. But still, she could be much healthier.
Yeah.
And there's something going on.
There is. Like, she's paying a price somewhere. And I said she's not paying it, like you said, invisibly with body fat. She's probably paying it in her arteries or her kidneys or her eye somewhere. And that's sad, but that's just how society is, you know? And another, I guess the final study I wanted to touch on is I just looked at a study for all-cause mortality. So kind of looked into cases of cancer, obesity, diabetes, hypertension, heart disease, all the things we just talked about. So it was a study by Gerald M. Reeven. He's an endocrinologist and professor of medicine at Stanford. So he's actually the guy that coined the term metabolic syndrome. So he has an extensive knowledge of insulin and its role in the body. In 2012, he studied 208 apparently healthy people. So these are middle-aged people, non-obese, and they measured insulin status using very accurate method, SSPG. So that's important when you're actually measuring insulin. You need to use these real accurate measures because there are some tests out there that aren't as accurate, but SSPG is a very accurate method. So after testing their insulin sensitivity, they split the participants up into three groups based on their insulin status. So pretty much basically how insulin resistant were they, so low, medium, or high. And then they monitored them for 6 years and tracked all cases of disease and death. So patients with low insulin resistance had no incidence of disease or death in this 6 years. Patients in the middle third had 12 diseases diagnosed and 2 deaths. Patients with high insulin resistance had 28 diseases diagnosed and 4 deaths. And these diseases range from diabetes, heart disease, cancer, hypertension, and stroke. So just think, if you're insulin sensitive, no diseases, no deaths. If you're insulin resistant, 28 diseases and 4 deaths. That's a huge difference. So, and I want to talk about a little bit about the data that this like study produced. So for associational studies to carry weight, a variable risk, and in this case, the variable risk would be insulin resistance, multiplier should exceed 2x. And 2x is 200%. So the variable should at least double the risk. If it's 5x or 500%, that's a real good sign something's going on. That's like, all right, this is happening. We need to look into it more. So the risk multiplier in this case, which was insulin resistance, for this study was 40x. That's 4,000%. Like, that's like through the roof. That is as clear as day that this is happening. Insulin resistance is clear. And they corrected for other variables, and this is what happened. And in this study, they actually also tracked LDL. And the risk multiplier for LDL, and again, LDL, lipoprotein lipase, this is, lipoprotein lipase is a enzyme that pulls LDL into your actually fat supply. Actually, if you ever wonder why your fat, where your fat, like why you carry fat in your lower abdomen, is because you have more lipoprotein lipase in your lower abdomen. But that's a different story. Sorry, that's a different story for a different day. But LDL, the risk multiplier for LDL, just lipoprotein, was 1.001x. That's not even 1%. It was a non-factor.
Is that 0.1%?
Yeah, 0.1%. That is a non-factor. So this thing that we track, and if you go to a doctor right now and your LDL is kind of out of whack, they're like, oh shit, you know, X, Y, and Z is going on. What they really need to be measuring is insulin resistance.
Yeah, all-cause mortality is what everybody should care about. I care more if I die in the next 5 years than what I die from.
Yeah, what's the end result? Death. Yeah.
Like, yeah. I don't want to have heart disease, treat my heart disease so aggressively, and then develop cancer as a result of it. You know, something like that. Actually, I guess the opposite would be true. Like, if you have cancer, you treat your cancer
with poison.
Yeah, and then you develop heart disease or you develop diabetes or something else.
Yeah, did you really win?
No. Like, yeah, that all-cause mortality is the gold standard that we should go for.
Yeah, it really is.
Especially when we just talked about how the root cause is the same for all of them.
Yep,
it really is. It's that insulin resistance, that high sugar.
And you had a story with, so when your dad initially got diagnosed with cancer, you went with him to all the doctor's appointments.
I went to a couple of them. My dad didn't appreciate the way that I was acting, and yeah, it was just better that I just didn't go.
Yeah, but just, I wanted you to talk about it, because this, like, how to analyze data is people will misquote this data, and they'll kind of spin it to make these pharmaceutical companies and these drugs appear to be more effective than they actually are.
Yeah, so she brought up a study, and it was just
how this is your dad's doctor.
Yeah, the doctor. Yeah, she brought up how good this drug is to affect it, or the cancer. It was like a chemotherapy and the radiation. So I just kind of like brought up. I was like, well, is that study looking at deaths from heart disease or from cancer, or is it looking at all cause mortality? She's like, well, cancer. And then I was like, well, what about the all cause mortality? Because that's more important. Like, I think that my dad cares more about like if he's gonna die than dying from the cancer itself. Because chemotherapy doesn't target just cancer cells. There's no way it can do that. Luckily, cancer cells are weaker than most other healthy cells, so they'll kind of die off first. But it's like releasing a nuclear bomb. Like, you're not just killing people named Joe. You're killing everybody else of that city, too.
Yeah, sorry, Joe.
you know, everybody else is going along with it. So, yeah, you're not just able to just specify a drug like that. And radiation works the same way. You can kind of target a certain area, but you're not just targeting those cancer cells. Other cells are going to die. So all-cause mortality is really the way to look at any sort of study, like when it comes to pretty much any sort of treatment or any sort of disease.
Exactly. So when you see these, like, whatever, pharmaceutical companies, these ads saying, you know, this helps 20% with this, this helps, you know, 50% with this, what are they measuring? And if it is, like, an associational study, that variable risk they're measuring, it better be over 200% at least, closer to 500% for them to even kind of question and go down that road that maybe this medicine will help. I mean, it's just, sorry, that does not happen a lot. A lot of these companies are not going to do that, and they're not going to promote their medicine this way, because when they promote the methods, that's actually how they study what they measure, these medicines and their successful outcomes are not that positive. And if you knew the truth, you just wouldn't take the medicine. And no one's making money that way. So
yeah, most of them are like, hey, they increase your odds by like 20%. So that means like instead of like 1 in 50 dying, there's 2 in 50 dying. But like what are, and that's just from that disease.
Yeah, what are the symptoms created from this medicine?
Yeah, and like, is that all-cause mortality? Most likely not. Most likely they're just looking, they're giving you the data that makes them look the best.
Exactly. And the data that didn't look, that make them look good, guess what? You're never seeing them. Well, man, I think that was a pretty good little topic on soda.
Yeah, I mean, we could have went a lot deeper on pretty much everything, and we probably will eventually, because each of these diseases is in, like, its own podcast. We just try to make it as simple and as quick as possible just to show you how bad sugar, especially in the form of soda and these, like, sugary beverages, just how bad those actually are for you.
Yeah, super toxic. So did you have a tip of the week this week?
Yeah, and this goes right along with what we were saying. So a lot of people use like fruit smoothies or juice cleanses as a tool for losing weight, but
looking at you, Steve Jobs.
Yeah. Well, I have so many, a couple friends on Facebook that are promoting like their weight loss tool, and it's like a juice diet mostly from fruit. And it's like, well, fruit is put on this planet to make animals fat. So the only way I could see this possibly working is if your diet was complete shit before you started. So like, yeah, if you were eating nothing but donuts and ice cream and
Doritos,
drinking soda, you know what, fruit juice is probably good for you. But if you're coming from a pretty dialed in diet, like your diet's already pretty optimized, if you start drinking that fruit juice, it's going to make you fat. If you're starting from a healthy standpoint, like that fruit juice is there to make you fat. So I guess if you're super unhealthy, getting a little bit less unhealthy is a good thing, but that's not really what I would recommend. So if you just think about it naturally, most fruits ripen at the end of summer or fall. And our ancestors would just go ham on these fruits for a few months out of the year just so they can pack on some extra pounds of fat to survive through winter. And that's when winter food's less scarce, you're not going to be eating as much. So you need that, like, that extra fat to go around. But this is not typical for a year-round diet. This is only a couple months out of the year. Now we've made it summer every single day thanks to technological advances in shipping and refrigeration. Like, if you're eating, like, an apple right now, that apple in May is most likely from September or October. That's a very long time. Apples shouldn't stay ripe like that. And then also, like, thanks to shipping, we're able to get bananas from South America all the time.
Yeah, nothing about that's local.
Yeah, that's not natural at all. It's summer there. It's not, now it's summer here, but we shouldn't be able to get bananas during December.
Mm-mm.
Like, we should not be eating fruit from 15 countries away, like thousands of miles away from the Southern Hemisphere. There's nothing natural about that. And drinking the fruit is so much more fattening than eating the fruit. Because at least if you're eating the fruit, you're going to be having some fiber along with that. And what that's going to do is you have ghrelin receptors in your stomach. Those are essentially just stretch receptors. So that fiber is going to help stretch out those receptors in your stomach, letting your body know that you're full. But if you're just drinking this liquid, those stretch receptors don't become activated. So those hunger cues that are there just don't go away. So you can drink all the juice, you can drink cartons of juice, maybe you'll feel uncomfortable, but you're not feeling full. You're not getting a satiety signal at all. Whereas if you actually eat the whole fruit, now you're getting some fiber, you're not getting a shit ton of sugar, and we just went through how damaging all that sugar actually is. And yeah, now you're able to actually get some vitamins, get some antioxidants. You're actually able to get some benefits from the fruit without just a fat sugar bomb along with it, and you're actually going to be satiated. So if you do want to have some fruit, I always suggest local and fresh and like in season, but then also like just eat it. Don't run it through a juice blender unless you're actually trying to get fat and gain weight. And along with that, be careful that you're not going to develop all the other diseases that we just mentioned. If you are going to be doing fruit smoothies, you limit yourself. Hey, this is a time for growth. This is also a time to cut back. You know, you have to do those like pulses on and off with any sort of good diet. So don't be doing fruit smoothies year-round. Don't be eating fruit year-round, because there is a lot of damage that's going to be caused as a result.
Yeah, that's true. And something, yeah, just talking about pairing fiber with sugar. You can think of sugar as a poison and fiber like as an antidote. So I'm actually really anti-fiber. I don't like fiber at all, but that's because I don't take in any sugar. If I was taking in sugar, the poison, then you would need the antidote, and that'd be in the form of fiber. It does help negate some of those effects. It kind of slows down the rate of absorption of the sugar. and talking about fiber kind of expanding in your stomach and activating those ghrelin receptors, there's actually a story of, is it Metamucil? That's a fiber supplement, right? I think, yeah. And so what it is, I'm pretty sure it's a soluble fiber. It expands when it hits water. So there's a funny story of somebody kind of throwing away their Metamucil. They poured it down their kitchen sink pipe, right? Don't ask me why they did this.
I would just throw it in the trash.
You think you just throw it in the trash, yeah. Right? But whatever, for whatever reason, they did that. And just thinking, you know, they turn on the sink and they would just flush down the sink. No. When this shit hits water, it expands crazy. I'm talking 10x, 20x, 30x. And it exploded all their pipes in their kitchen.
Damn, that's crazy.
That's crazy. That's how much water that shit soaks up. And it creates so much space in your stomach. And that's what actually causes that satiety to kick in. And that's so key. So when you're drinking these fruit smoothies, you're not getting that at all. And good luck having whatever, 100 grams of sugar in 30 minutes. You know, there's nothing natural about that.
Yeah, that's why they're able to make those juice beverages. Like, you need two hands to carry that. Like, they don't even fit in your cup holders of your car anymore. Like, you're able to drink that like it's nothing. And that's like, I just ate 40 apples, 13 bananas, 75 strawberries. When you couldn't sit down and eat that.
No.
You would get, like, you would be force feeding yourself.
Your jaws would hurt.
Yeah, like, you would just feel so uncomfortable. You're able to drink that in 2 minutes, like, no problem.
Yeah. Enjoy every sip.
Yeah, so, like, if you do want something sweet, make sure you eat it so you can get, like, you know, those satiety signals. And you're actually going to be satisfied instead of just craving more and more and more.
That is a good tip. All right, well, that is another episode in the books. Next week is going to be part three of the five-part series of the five worst foods. So we've done industrial seed oils. We've done soda. Next week, what are we doing next week?
What do you want to do? Do you want to do...
If we do Doritos, that's kind of your
We can either jam. Do Doritos, or did you want to talk about soy?
Oh, God. Soy. I hate soy. No, I want to do soy last because I'm going to go ham on soy.
Okay, so we'll be doing Doritos next
time. Let's do Doritos. Yeah, that'll be fun. So if you're interested, you want to learn more about Doritos and why they're bad, and that's actually kind of a unique case. I'm interested. I'm actually going to learn a lot this week doing research for that. But so tune in next week. And you can find the podcast and you can find us at TNTWellnessAndNutrition.com. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, so feel free to reach out. You can also email us at TNTWellnessAndNutrition@gmail.com. So feel free to reach out anytime.
Yeah, please rate and subscribe to our podcast. You can find us on all major providers, Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Google Play. And also subscribe to our emailing list on our website, TNTWellnessAndNutrition.com. That's where you get all our new articles, all the tips of the week, all our podcasts. They get emailed to you directly so you don't even have to think about it. Hope everybody has a happy and healthy week.